Is there something more to grace than just saying it before a meal? Hello, I'm Paul Dibdahl, and welcome to The Good Word. Our topic this week is grace, and my conversation partners are Dr. Dave Thomas and Dr. Carl Kosart, both colleagues of mine in the School of Theology here at Walla Walla University. Thank you for joining me today.
Glad to do so, Paul.
Thank you.
So what about grace? Our pattern over the last few weeks has been to begin our lesson with trying to define the word that's the topic for the day, and it's grace. What is grace?
Grace is one of the most significant words that we find in the writings of the Apostle Paul in the New Testament. In fact, of all the times it's used, I forget the exact numbers, but almost, you know, double or triple in Paul's writings. And it's interesting because it's so crucial, we haven't defined it yet, but he actually begins and he ends each of his 13 letters in the New Testament with a reference to the word grace. And I think by grace, many people would identify that with the definition of unmerited favor, something that is not earned, this act of kindness, of well-being disposed upon us by God when we have done nothing to earn it.
Unmerited favor, if we were to try to boil it down to the
two words, yes.
Unmerited favor.
Well, I think it's somebody letting you off the hook, so to speak, so you don't get what you might otherwise deserve.
Mm-hmm.
This is a New Testament concept, right?
Actually, it's fascinating because it comes from an interesting word in the Old Testament, which actually means to bend down or to stoop. And it was an act of usually a superior leaning down to help someone who's fallen or someone in a lower status. And so grace is not just this abstract idea of unmerited favor, but it's the act of reaching down to someone who's in need, who cannot help themselves, and assisting them.
Okay.
So rooted in a very
beautiful,
graphic.
Yeah,
beautiful.
A word picture.
You know, I got a little story that might help. When I was in junior high, I was in a school system that allowed, and in fact had quite a few regulations involving what we call corporal punishment, the use of the hickory stick.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, there were three other guys and myself, we did something that was against the rules, and we got hauled into the principal's office and explained to us our infractions. And he then explained to us the designated punishment, which in our case was going to be 4 strikes with a cane.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, oh boy, this is going to be quite a ride. And he actually got the cane out of its hiding place and asked who of us would like to be first. And, you know, in that lineup, there are not many volunteers. And so finally one boy did, and the principal took a hold of him and raised the cane. And he said, you know, boys, it just strikes me that there might be a different way of doing this. He says, how about we just forget the punishment if you boys will pledge that you'll never go. We had gone onto a part of the campus we weren't supposed to go on. He said, if you'll pledge to me, as long as you're in the school, you'll never go there again. He says, we'll just call it an evening.
Huh.
Well, we all made that pledge real quick. And the interesting thing was we all kept it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we'd been caned, we might have figured, well, we'll try and beat the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, there we didn't get what we deserved. And what interests me about grace is the effect it has.
Yeah.
Mm. See,
transforming.
It doesn't produce rebellion. It produces gratitude. And gratitude is a very powerful motivator that includes the will. Mm. The law is always against the will. You know, if you have to abide by the law, there's often kind of a sense of resistance and cantankerousness. But to be saved from a circumstance by the graciousness of a person is to breed a great deal of gratitude.
I would just make one small change that expression is that grace truly understood results in transformation.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's many who don't realize the gift they've been given, and they go right back to the same spot because they've not put the sufficient value on it that is there.
So. Well, I've heard the expression cheap grace before.
Mm-hmm.
If we're just all about grace and not giving people what they deserve, if we emphasize this attribute of God, that God is a God of grace.
You mean overemphasize?
Well, overemphasize. Mm-hmm. isn't there a danger that people will then presume upon God's grace and sort of do whatever they want? After all, God is going to,
yes,
he's not going to cane them.
I know several preachers who put it this way, and it kind of makes you kind of wrinkle your eyebrows at first, but they have said, if you aren't preaching real grace, if you aren't criticized for perhaps opening the door for some sort of license. And their ultimate justification for that is Paul's writings himself, because Paul was accused of simply, saying, it's just making it too easy for these people. But Paul himself states very clearly in Romans 6, verse 1, what shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace may abound?
And that's what kind of the argument was, right? Or is that what you're suggesting, Paul?
And exactly. And Paul says, no, by no means. It's easy to misunderstand it and to think that's where it's going, but it goes to really a greater level of obedience, as Dave just said earlier, than you could get any other way.
See, theologians have understood grace in several categories. One of them is called prevenient grace. Mm-hmm. Another one is the saving grace of God, and the other is the sustaining or reforming grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
And most of what falls into common explanation for grace is simply God's saving grace.
Mm.
And if we only talk about God's saving grace, we miss the other two dimensions that bring a great balance that help prevent this gratuitous use of God's gracious.
Can you flesh those out, prevenient grace?
Well, prevenient grace is really a very broad act of God to preserve the human race in general from the effects of sin, because if you leave people just on their own after a couple of generations, any inclination they might have toward God is gone, and their ability to choose between good and evil is gone. And so God acts in a way that he preserves for every generation this latitude to know good and evil and to make choices between it. That's called prevenient grace, a simple one.
Mm-hmm.
The saving grace of God is precisely his goodness, where he saved sinners.
Mm-hmm.
Why should he do that? Well, that is, the preachers who talk scandalously about, or they talk about scandalous grace, are really talking about that moment
saving
of grace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the saving grace of God, where God goes completely against what you would think is even reasonable, and says, "Look, I don't really care if this person is willing to trust me. Whatever they've done is immaterial." And God's sustaining grace, though, is one that we never hear about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it shows up in Paul's great prayer, where he's suffering affliction and he says, "Lord, please heal me. I'm your missionary. You've got to do something."
Mm-hmm.
And after three times, what word does he get?
"My grace is sufficient."
Now, you guys think about that. What does that mean?
Mm.
My grace is sufficient for you? What kind of grace is that? He's saying, "Paul, suffer long. My grace will sustain you." See, and that I think is another side to grace, that once you have experienced the saving grace of God, then it's your privilege to experience the, the sustaining and the reforming form of grace.
Perhaps I can share a verse that actually gives us a definition both of the saving grace and then that sustaining grace. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 10. Paul has just been talking about his relationship to the other apostles, and he says, "By the grace of God, saving grace, I am what I am, and his grace toward me was not in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that worked in me."
Mm-hmm.
So that grace is an enabling grace. And it's not merely just the forgiveness and a merited favor. That's part of it. But it's also a supernatural enabling power to sustain you in the course of your Christian life.
Mm-hmm. Not to enable you to continue on in a life of sin, but in the opposite
direction.
And see, the problem is if we misunderstand grace, then people do abuse it and it becomes license.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, society can tend toward chaos pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. And that's how I think many people in the Muslim world, for example, have looked at Christianity, as they've identified it with our Western culture. And they say, this idea of grace leads to licentiousness, immorality, and therefore that must be wrong. Because how could you justify this type of behavior to a God who loves us so much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we had to isolate...
I was just thinking that there has been a school of thought that you should sin more, because the more you sin, the more opportunity God has to spread his grace abroad.
And that's what Paul addresses.
Paul was not charmed with that.
If we were to try to isolate, isolate's the wrong word. If we were to try to identify the supreme act of grace, unmerited favor of God. Could we point to an event or an act of God that demonstrates God's grace in the fullest sense?
I would go to Philippians 2. Those great verses of the condescension of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
That he thought, equality with God, not something to be held on to, but he humbled himself, came down to earth.
Became obedient to death.
Yeah.
Even death on a cross. Yeah.
God became a servant. Mm. Boy, that's pretty gracious.
I would think of reading scripture again, Romans 5, verse 6. For while we were still weak, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare to die. But God shows his love for us, not while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And then later on he says, for if while we were enemies, we were reconciled. So sinners, ungodly, enemies, weak. What a tremendous outpouring of God's love we see at the cross.
How does a person, so a person listens to this, they recognize, they sense that they are a sinner, and they recognize that God is a God of grace, that forgiveness, salvation flow from the cross. How would a person respond to that? How could a person incorporate that or somehow be the recipient of God's saving grace? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that you simply take the risk of saying, Lord, I recognize my plight, and I would like to be the recipient of your grace. And I think in that moment there comes a Holy Spirit-engineered supernatural transaction that your mind, your heart, your inner being is transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And it now begins to be interested in the things of God and begins to grow.
I would say a thing like that is a struggle for all of us because the world around us operates on the principle of earn your own way, that there's nothing free. And so one of the greatest battles we face is how could God accept me where I am?
Yeah.
No one else can. How could God do that?
There must, I think, deep down we think, there must be something that I have to do first. Mm-hmm. Or there's probably something that would somehow throw this off. It couldn't quite be this good.
And yet the truth is we all know how to receive a gift. And it is actually a very inappropriate thing to say, Paul, thank you for the gift. I'd like to give you money for it.
Mm. Yeah.
See, that's no longer a gift. And we know how to accept gifts. We just need to learn to gratefully accept this gift from God.
And Paul even shows us just how shocking it is because he doesn't call that just a gift in Romans chapter 5. He calls it the free gift.
Yeah, the free gift.
It's the double freebie.
Yeah. It's a gift and it's free.
Get the point. It's free.
In case you missed it the first time around. Well, it strikes me today that there are probably people that are listening who may not have made that decision to say, Lord, here I am. Sinner, you know that, but I would like to accept that gift of grace that you offer. And now is as good a time as any to pray that prayer to receive the grace that God so willingly offers to us. I hope that's a decision that you'll make. Thank you, Dave and Carl, for your willingness to share. Thanks also to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer. And finally, thank you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.